Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Now, there's no more storied footballing county than the green and red of Mayo. And throughout recent years of misfortune sometimes and doubt, but always entertainment, the Mayo people's spirit for their team has remained undiminished. And this morning we're joined by one of the legendary figures from that generation of players who've endured an extraordinary and enthralling, I think it's 6 All-Ireland finals, 7 if you're counting replays. He's only just retired from the Intercounty altar and he's a bit of a giant, Rob Henley. How are you doing? Good morning.
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me, Oliver. It's good to be here.
You were Mayo's second choice and then first choice goalkeeper in your career, isn't that right? And
yeah.
3 All-Ireland finals you started in.
Yeah.
Not many people in the goalies' jerseys get to do that in their career.
No, it's only kind of in the last couple of weeks I've been really reflecting on it. You know, as a young keeper starting out, would I have thought I got to play in 3 All-Irelands, be part of 6 or 7 of them? I probably wouldn't have thought that. So I'm very lucky from that perspective. But obviously we didn't get the result in the end that we wanted. But to be up at that level consistently over 10, 15-year period, you know, I think it was a testament to the team and the players that we had, and I suppose the resilience that we kind of showed that we could keep coming back, especially when we were playing against some of the teams that we got to play against over that period as well. But yeah, it's kind of weird. I wouldn't really have reflected on too much in my career, but it's kind of in the last 2-3 weeks you kind of try and digest, I suppose, make the most of the situation. You're kind of like, well, what can I pull from it that's positive? But I suppose when I reflect on that, that's probably the most positive, that I got to play at the highest level for as long as I did.
It sounds like it's only dawning on you now.
That is, you don't want to, because I suppose my mindset up until very recently was that, you know, this year and getting an opportunity to go that step further and try and push it on for as long as I could. But once you kind of make the decision to step away from that, you kind of have to then look and just take stock of it and see what you can take learnings from it. And I suppose that's what I've been doing. And, you know, thankfully I have some nice memories to look back on, and, you know, great friendships and so many positives.
Yeah, you do. What age are you?
I'm 34.
Is that considered old now in this semi-professional age of GAA athleticisms?
I don't know. I think, well, there's been a few. Obviously, Michael Murphy's come out of retirement, and you see Conor McManus, yeah, and Manon is staying on. And, you know, it's great to see. I think it's something that we need to look to do more of, is keep older players in the game. I think for me, like as a keeper, it's like it wasn't a physical, like I physically felt like I could keep playing and,
yeah,
and mentally and all that, but it was just more the toll it was taking on other aspects of my life. And I'm living in Dublin, you know, I've been travelling up and down to Dublin for what, 10, 15 years now, to get to training and stuff. So
the whole time,
I love living in Dublin, so it was something I was more than willing to do, but at some point it kind of starts to take a toll. And then obviously we've a child coming in the end of March, so
congratulations.
That was going to, yeah, put a stifer on it anyways. So it's better to make the decision now, I suppose, in a couple of months' time.
You told everyone just before Christmas?
Yeah, so really quick. In the end, it was very quick. I kind of sprung it on everyone close to me. I just had one car journey. I'd been thinking about it for a long time, but it was one car journey. It just became very clear to me that it wasn't sustainable. And I just made a couple of calls, and it was done, basically, from my perspective at that point. And I trained one more time at Mayo, and that was it. That was my last session.
You must know exactly how long it takes to drive from wherever you are in Dublin to training every week. How long did it take?
Well, it's kind of averaged out about 2.5 hours, but it depends what time you leave. If you leave at 6 a.m, it's 2.5 hours. If you leave at the wrong time, it can be 3.5-4 hours. Like, you know, it's
wow,
you know, the traffic
from back
in Dublin.
All those years.
Yeah, but I actually, you know, I like driving, so I didn't look it on as a kind of a task. It was just something. It was nice time by yourself. You could listen to podcasts, do different things like that. Make the most of the time. But like when you look at the cumulative effect of it, it does have an impact on everything, the body, and it's a lot. It's, you know, 15, 20 hours a week in a car, you know.
Would you have come from training and driven back?
Yeah. I'd usually go up and down the one day. So like that was, and yeah, I wasn't the only one doing it. I'm sure there's plenty of lads all over the country doing it.
Yes,
but yeah, I know that road well. And, you know, that's the other thing as well. It's you know, get on the road every day, there's risk in that as well, you know. But it was worth it. It was worth it, definitely.
You've a lot going on in your life, as you say. You're married. That's the lovely Orla.
Yes.
She's expecting in March. Where do you work?
I'm working in a company just 10, 15 minutes from here, Cartroller. Irish tech company. So, you know, I'm very lucky. You know, throughout my footballing career, I was able to, you know, progress my professional career, which is what actually pays the bills.
Doesn't always happen.
No, and, you know, I kind of made a conscious effort that I didn't want to, you know, let's say, sacrificed parts of my career to just to play football. Mm-hmm. And as such, you know, I obviously lived in Dublin and I was lucky enough to get a great role in Car Trawler. It's a great Irish company, tech company, very proud of it.
It operates around the world as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So we work with...
What does it do?
So car rental, very exciting, car rental technology. So if you're ever booking a flight and you get offered, do you want to book a car rental? There's a good chance Car Trawler do that technology.
See.
Now we do it across. So we work with like American Airlines, EasyJet, Jet2 over in the UK. We also work with like the Uber and Hopper and stuff like that. So really, really cool company, great culture, you know, and it's great for me that, you know, it's totally separate to my football, but it's just as challenging in different ways. So I'm very lucky.
You have a club now in Dublin. You have for the last few years, haven't you?
Yeah. So I joined, started 2023 to try and kind of limit the amount of time I spent in the car. I said it wasn't going to be sustainable at the split season to do, you know, for 9-10 months a year, be up and down to Dublin. And I just made a decision. I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to do it now, I might as well join the club while I'm still half decent at football. And so at the start of January 2023, I'd reached out to Rini and asked them if they'd like another keeper.
Yeah.
And thankfully, they were great, really open to me coming in. It's been a breath of fresh air, to be honest. I'm really excited about kind of committing more time to them over the next few months because it's only 15 minutes over the road for me now.
It's a huge club.
Yeah, big club. Yeah, big club, lovely area. Like a non-area I would have been overly familiar with before I joined. But like everyone I've met there have been incredible, and it's kind of nice playing club football in Dublin because every time you go to a game you meet someone from Mayo because there's so many Mayo people up here and they all come up to you afterwards. And
there's nobody in Mayo.
No, in fairness, that's unfortunately a lot of people have left. But so yeah, it's been a great experience.
So you finish up your career, your inter-county career, that is, because you're still playing away in the club. 7 Connacht Championship medals, 2 league titles, 2 All-Star nominations along the way, probably the hardest All-Star to win, and lots more medals under 21 level and college level because you went to DCU here in Dublin. A lot of pain along the way. Was it worth it?
Yeah, it was. It was worth it, definitely. Because like for the pain, yeah, there was individually and collectively we'd pain in the losses, but... it was worth it because, you know, we were literally pushing ourselves as hard as we could for as long as we could. And I could say that for every teammate I had throughout that whole period, whether they were in the squad for 1 year or for 12 years or 15 years. And you don't get that in too many, you know, walks of life where you're in a group where everyone pushing in the same direction, trying to be the best you can be. And, you know, we got so close. And as I said, we played, come up against, you know, a generational team in Dublin, but also, you know, a really, really strong Donegal team, probably an underrated Donegal team in 2012. And of course,
that was the first of the kind of All-Irelands, wasn't it?
That was the first one in 2012. Yeah. So
you started the following year in that All-Ireland final.
In 2013 was the first time we played Dublin in the All-Ireland final. And, yeah, mad game as well. A lot of them were mad games.
And, you know, they were never boring.
No. This is me looking at it from my perspective, but I felt like with Dublin, we always kind of prepared to go toe-to-toe with them, which often was to our detriment, but it also put them in a position where they made mistakes that they wouldn't usually make. So it was kind of a challenging game for them. Ultimately, though, if you look at the averages, they won out most of them. So they were obviously able to finish games out, and they had that couple of percent that we didn't have. But
what was maddening for the neutrals of us watching always was Dublin was just hammering everyone around them. And then they meet Mayo, the only team that could, as you say, go toe-to-toe. But, you know, 1-point victories eked out. They just managed to get past.
Yeah, well, they had like such strong squads. Like you'd have one player marked and then some fellow come off the bench. And, you know, I don't know how many times that happened to us and he'd, you know, kick 3 or 4. But like, you know, when I look at my career and I was reflecting on it, one of the things I'm so proud of or was very lucky to have was that I played with some of the best players probably to ever play the game. You know, Leakey and Keating, it's not going to mention them all, but incredible players, but also got to play against some incredible players. When you look at over the years, that Dublin team, like some Michael Murphy, you know, different counties across the country, even keeper-wise, it was a golden generation for goalkeepers as well. Like David Clark in my own team, obviously Stephen Cluxton in his pomp, but even the likes of Niall Morgan, Roy Began, you know, you see Sean Patton, Shane Ryan.
It's a period that changed goalkeeping.
Yeah, it was. It has changed.
Harder.
And it's changing again, I think, as well, which is exciting too. So, yeah, loads of positives. But it was probably hard to watch from the neutral perspective. But, you know, we gave it everything and, you know, we tried things. And, you know, at the end of the day, Dublin just had that bit on us.
Does it matter that you didn't win in All-Ireland along those years?
Yeah, it mattered to me. I would, you know, I felt like we worked hard enough to get one, probably not maybe smart enough all the time, unfortunately. And, you know, when you look back, you want to have that All-Ireland.
I suppose what I mean is, you know, the memories are so incredible. Yeah. And each time playing this sport at the top level with a million people watching All-Ireland finals every time, I mean, that has to mean something as well.
Oh, it does. It does. And as I said, when I reflect on it, you know, it's unique. Like, it is unique when you know, I was chatting to someone from Australia this morning. She knows a bit about football and she was, you know, she thinks it's mad that there's these two kind of careers running side by side, one where you're playing in front of Croke Park and then the next day you're in the office.
Your job, yeah.
And she was just saying that, and she doesn't really know much about Gaelic football. But, you know, it at the end of the day, from a player's perspective, it's about that extra percent, because if we can get over the line in those on that big day, I would love to have experienced what would happen, you know, after that and things like that. So, yeah, regrets around that. But, of course, I'm so grateful. Like, 95% of players who go out in their career don't get to play for their county. They don't get to play and win provincial championships. They definitely don't get to play in All-Ireland finals if they're not doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, extremely grateful that, you know, I got to experience all of that and the good parts of it and the bad parts of it.
And as a result, Mayo remain contenders, because obviously it encourages other youngsters to come up, doesn't it? All
that's it. And like, I, you know, when I started kind of properly playing championship football in 2011, like prior to that, like, you know, Mayo football wasn't in a great place. You know, I think the last 10-15 years has given us a great foundation.
You forget that, actually, wouldn't you? 2011, you what, 20 years of age?
21 is my first championship, but I'd been in the squad the 2 years previous. But, you know, we'd been beaten by Longford and Sligo the year previous in 2010. It was a really bad year for Mayo football. You know, we were going into the kind of final. I think every game that year we were underdogs. You know, to get from that position to being in a position where we're All-Ireland contenders consistently every year. And I think what we're seeing now is a new generation of players come through, which is really exciting. But also seeing some of the lads that I played with are getting involved with underage teams in Mayo and senior teams across the country. And that's exciting as well, to see them coming through and coaching, and what that'll bring to the overall system in Mayo. I think it's going to be really positive as well.
Yeah, you mentioned 2011 you started. Was your family steeped in GAA? Were you coming from a long line of...
I wouldn't say we're steeped. Like, they're all as into GAA, like, on both sides of the family. But, like, there wasn't, you know, Mayo footballers, you know, at senior level in the family, really. So it wasn't necessarily that. I was probably, in my own immediate family, was the only one who really got into it, to be honest.
What's the main interest of the family?
Just generally across sport generally, in fairness. We would play a bit of golf when I was younger, and, you know, obviously GAA was in Mayo. Like, we're a bit spoiled because GAA is the only sport, really. Like, soccer, I played soccer and all, but like, GAA is
not much competitive
sport.
Yeah,
it's not, compared to other counties, and it's an advantage we have as well. And, you know, that, you know, if you're younger, if you're a good soccer player, unless you're going to potentially go to England, if you're a good soccer player or a good Gaelic player, you're more likely going to go and play Gaelic, because the opportunities lie there in Mayo. So
it's funny how that goes, isn't it, culturally? Because it was years in Limerick, they thought, oh, we'd have a great hurling team if only some people would give up a bit of rugby. And of course, it veers in that direction.
It does, and it's like a virtuous circle then, because they're doing better, more people want to play hurling. And, you know, you see it in Dublin with football now, the numbers they have in football is incredible, you know. So,
including yourself, of course, it's there. But the family, I think, were involved in horses, are they?
Yeah, Dad, in fairness to him, we've farmed at home, and Dad, you know, breeds horses and stuff like that, so he's been into it for a long, long time, and still has a couple of horses running with Gavin Cromwell and stuff. So it's like massive passion, like, for the whole family. We love horse racing. It's great, great sport, and love horses as animals as well, so they're like extended family.
An all-encompassing sport, isn't it? You rarely have such a GAA you know, greats emerging out of horsey families.
No, well, and we're not. I wouldn't necessarily describe it as a horsey family, but because, you know, Mayo wouldn't be the typical thoroughbred racing part of the world. But in fairness to Dad, he just always had an interest in them, and now he's, you know, he does it all himself at home on the farm, and it's something that we're always going to be interested in.
You had to fight for your position as the goalie, and that was, I presume, driving up and down from Dublin was part of the kind of show of determination.
Yeah, like, I think I said this in the last couple of weeks, but, you know, one of the things that I was very lucky to get was that my whole career basically was in parallel with David Clark, who was the other keeper at Mayo, and, like, an incredible keeper, Mayo's best keeper ever, and, you know, someone that, you know, I have huge admiration for, but of course we were both going for the same position, and it's not like you can, you know, use a keeper for 10 or 15 minutes at the end of the game. It's a very black and white position. You're either starting or you're not. And it was great. I think, I don't know, sometimes I think would both of us preferred if neither of us had to compete with each other and we just had it for that 10 or 12 years. But look, the fact is that we were competing against each other, and I do think you know, in the particularly the last 6-7 years, it made me a much better keeper. And I think, you know, Clark and I often would talk about this, that, you know, we both were probably better as a result of it. You know, he's a hugely competitive person, so he had great quality of training. And it meant, you know, over the course of that period that it was going over and back between us. I started in 2011, he was 2012. He got injured in 13, I came in. You know, it was this kind of...
You're sitting around waiting for the goalie to get injured, basically, so that they're out of position. And there's only one position if you're a goalie, so you set your sights on that.
Yeah, and it's like a game within a game. It's similar to Rick Brogby, the out-half position. It's, you know, you kind of have to have a different skill set. You train together. It's very, you know, it's a strange one. We room together for all the time we go on away games. So you're very close, but at the same time, you're competing against each other.
That's
so
funny.
But it was great. As I said, like to play, I think, 75 times for Mayo in a time where David Clark was also there, I think it was a big achievement. And, you know, I got to play against in some of the biggest games in that time as well.
You did, for sure. There's a message here saying Rob Save versus David Clifford in the league final 2019 was the winning of the league, world-class save. Even Clifford couldn't believe how he saved it. Thanks, Rob, for all your years of service to the green and red. That's from Paul in County Mayo.
Oh, that's very nice. Yeah.
When people come up to you, do they point to specific memories? Are they always positive?
When they come up to me, yeah, they usually point to, in fairness to them, yeah, they would usually point to different times, like 2021, we bet Dublin in the semi-final or that, the league final. Most people who come up, you know, usually it's kind of to chat about, generally about Mayo football and, like, wish we could get over the line or could have got over the line, all those things. And we're kind of in it together because that's how we all feel. It was very much a collective in Mayo in relation to, we're all on the same journey together. So it's kind of like they know you because we've been playing, you know, Mayo supporters, it's like a big kind of collective, as I said. So the conversations vary, like, you know, obviously you get the negative ones around, you know, this shouldn't have happened and things like that. But
what do you say to people when they come on? You know, having driven up and down 5-hour, 6-hour round trips training, then someone points out a flaw that happened along.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's part. I'm not saying I always reacted well to it, but when I look at it, you know, people care. They care so much about it. Like, you know, Mayo supporters in particular care so much about it that, you know, they're entitled to have an opinion. They drive up and down to matches in Dublin and they go to games in the league and all this stuff. So, you know, it's one thing I can't begrudge a supporter is having an opinion on it because, you know, they're entitled to it. They love Mayo football. I would say to them, yeah, of course, you know, we do too, and we're doing all this work to try and not make those mistakes. But I suppose I'd admire someone who would actually say it to my face as well. You know, you can have a conversation with them, and usually, you know, it peters out then, and they kind of see your perspective on it. But you know, I have to understand, like, they're entitled to their opinion, and sometimes their opinions are correct as well. So you have to take that on board too.
I want to bring you back to somewhere you probably don't want to go. First of all, there was an unbelievable crazy final in 2016, the original final, and it comes to replay. There's two goals in that, isn't there? And one of them's an own goal.
Two of them.
Very early on in the match.
Two of them were own goals.
David Clark, two of them were own goals. That's just extraordinary. I can't even believe it. Now, more than 8 years later, David Clark is in goals. But incredibly, Mayo draw that game and force it to a replay. And then that's followed by one of the, I think, objectively madcap management decisions in All-Ireland history, which was to switch the goalkeeper just days before the replay. And that switch was to you.
Yeah. It was mad. It was a mad period. Like, the first game was, you know, the idea of, I don't think I've ever seen an own goal in a GA match or too many of them, and to have two goals conceded, and obviously, you know, we pulled it back, then Killian kicked an unbelievable point to level it later on. And, you know, it was a good performance first day, but I suppose we had 2 week period in between that game, and, you know, I did think after the first game there was a chance I could play. But, you know, at the same time, it was a small chance. It was just because I think Dublin had a big press on our kickouts in the first game, and we'd struggled a bit to win them. So I thought maybe there's a chance. But anyways, yeah, a couple of days before it, get the call, like on the Thursday, that I was going to be playing on the Saturday, and, you know, don't say it to anyone, the usual stuff. And I took that to heart, didn't say it to anyone, didn't say it to Orla, didn't say it to my family, whatever, which in fairness, I can, you know, they wanted to keep the...
But difficult preparation.
I was, yeah, because I wasn't mentally ready for playing. Like, it's totally different. Let's say if Clarkie got injured at training Wednesday, you know, it's different mindset.
Yeah.
But when I'm replacing Dave Clark, who is incredible keeper, did very little wrong in the previous game. I could understand why they would do it.
In fact, a lot of his saves is the reason it goes to a replay, isn't it?
Oh, he made two or three like one-on-one saves, and obviously massive experience. And while us as a team could understand the call, and you know, if you step back, you could understand why you would maybe put me in for the kickouts. It was still a massive call to make, and you know, for me, I just wasn't ready for it. And as much as I tried to wrap my head around it, in the days previous, a 2-day turnaround to get your head right for an All-Ireland final replay,
it's impossible.
It was a bit difficult, but
and you're what, 25, 26?
Yeah, 26, and like I had good experience. Like I, as I said, like it's when I think about it now. I'm sure there's people out there listening, that's the best thing you did. You'd love that opportunity to play an All-Ireland final. And I did, and I was trying to battle with this.
But it was also the big talking point in the run-up to it. So you were suddenly the centre of national sporting attention.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're 10, 5 minutes into the second half? You make a mistake that really...
Kind of, yeah. It was, yeah. I just took my off it. But it was kind of, when I look at that mistake, it was coming. You know, when I look back at my performance now, kind of objectively, and, you know, in the first half, I think I made a mistake. Didn't hit a kick out to Shane O'Shea and Leroy end up getting, Lee Keegan end up getting black carded. And I remember thinking, oh my God, like that was probably the bigger moment, because Lee was our best player, happened to go off at the time.
So you're shook from that?
I'm shook from that.
You're blaming yourself there.
Oh yeah, well, you know, I was in a constant state of anxiety from the moment I got the call telling him I was starting till like the night before I shouldn't be laughing, but night before the All-Ireland final, you know, you think you're not going to be able to sleep. I was in bed at 9 and I slept till 9 o'clock the next morning because I was just exhausted.
You're wrecked.
I was just exhausted. So, yeah, I just didn't have the skills to deal with that type of situation. Mm. And like, you know, now looking back, I probably have them now because I learned from it the hard way. But, you know, there was lots of things that could have been done to avoid it.
Which part do you think was a mistake? Because you come running out, don't you? There's a kick pass from about the 45.
Yeah.
You're coming around and you fumble the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And you obviously notice they're through on goal. So you've got a drag.
Yeah, well... So that's
Paddy Andrews, isn't
mistake.
It?
Yeah, and
drag him down and you get black carded.
But that's the thing with big games, and if you don't have the mindset or you haven't done the prep, the simple things become very hard to do, and that was a simple catch. And you know, I've obviously learned from it since, but you know, at that time you take your eye off it because you're trying to think 2-3 steps ahead and you make the mistake. You know, I think it was soft enough when I look at it objectively. You know, I got contact on the ball. I think it was soft enough penalty, but you know, once you're scrambling like that,
the ref is.
I need to hit the. I know, so not getting into that part. But
anyway, look, you had to sit on the sidelines watching Dermot Connolly score the penalty. Yeah. Have you ever watched the moment back?
Oh, I have, yeah, of course. Yeah, I've like reviewed it all because I had to learn from it. So reviewed it all. Watched like on the sideline, you're just kind of going through, you're just hoping the team can pull out of the bag so that you can get the mistake isn't what costs the game. That's your kind of mindset in the sideline. So obviously we didn't get over the line, and
only by a point.
Yeah, and we put a massive effort in even to get it to a point, like, and yeah, it was just, yeah, it was not
people
a good
remember
day.
The team came straight around you, didn't they, at the final whistle to show their support. In other words, you know, we're all in it together.
Yeah.
One mistake isn't the reason we've lost the match.
Yeah, like, you know, when I think about it, that time, you know, after the media aftermath, the biggest thing for me was, obviously my family were incredible, because you kind of, your circle gets really small once something like that happens. And family are incredible, but my teammates were unbelievably supportive, like way more than I thought they would be. I thought, you know, they'd hate me because of the performance. But every single one of them, to a man, like even including Clarkey, who was obviously not an easy day for him because, you know, he was getting dropped and all of that stuff. And, you know, it, from that perspective, you know, that gave me great heart that at least I still had the respect of my teammates, and I could kind of build from there, try and rebuild from there more so than build from there. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, that was something that I really appreciated. I had a great support at home. My family, I could, you know, that place where I could go and be safe, you know, after that game.
And then I had my teammates. Because people became very stupid about that, didn't they? There was a lot of abuse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like, there is going to be, like, this is something I know now, but at the time it was obviously it felt very personal and all that, but yeah,
It was personal.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the nature of sport, and we see it every day of the week in professional sport. You know, you are going to become, you know, part of the public discourse, and you're going to get abuse online and letters to the house and all this crack. So, it was difficult to take at that time because I was thinking the same thing as a lot of the people were saying, you know. So was just, you know, a bad kind of place to be in for a relatively young lad who had other things in his life that he should have been able to focus on.
No, you were definitely
well.
A young lad.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And this is the moment where people forget that sport is entertainment, you know, and that doesn't mean if a mistake is made that anyone has died.
Yeah.
But it's treated so seriously, isn't it?
Yeah, well, back to my point earlier, it means so much to so many people. And, you know, when you have a game like that where such a big decision is made and it doesn't work out, you know, people are entitled to ask questions, you know, why this happened. And unfortunately, there was probably a bit of a void after this where no one really spoke. And I think that was, you know, that was meant anyone could give an opinion and that would fill the void. And, you know, when I look back, that probably wasn't handled that well. We could have probably, as a, you know, Mayo generally could have probably put out a statement or said something a bit better after it. But look, that's
because the abuse was so severe, wasn't it, as well? But the wonderful thing about the story is that there's a very good redemption in 2021 where you have another heart-stopping moment. But we're going to take a quick break before we come to that.
Email Oliver at rte.ie.
Now I'm here with Rob Henley, who's freshly retired from the Mayo Intercounty team. And we were talking about the bad moments of 2016, Rob. But 2021 is the redemption moment, isn't it? Remind us what's happening. Dublin are the absolute pinnacle. They're going for 7 All-Irelands in a row. They're literally unstoppable at this stage. And what is there, 2 minutes left in the match and they're a point ahead?
Oh, yeah. There was a bit of controversy because I got to take it twice, but I think it's on the stroke or close enough to the stroke as the last minute of extra time. And, you know, it's what everyone dreams of as a young lad, an opportunity.
It's a 45.
To leveler from a 45.
You've already taken it and didn't go.
There was a sub, something coming on, and the linesman was saying to me, hold, hold, hold. And I just kicked it anyways to get a bit of nervousness out of the legs. But, so then I got a chance to take it again, obviously, and stuck to the process.
Just to level the game and bring it to extra time.
Yeah.
And can the wounded goalie heal the scars of 2016? Here's Darren Maloney.
So the 7 minutes have gone, the referee will add probably another two. So Hennelly missed the first one, he loves this one, and Hennelly has put it between the posts. He had to wait such a long time. Nerves of steel, ice in the veins from Rob Hennelly.
That was a special moment for Mayo because obviously extra time you go on and finally beat the Dubs.
Mm. Yeah, no, it was great. And like, even to hear Dara's commentary there describing ice in the veins, like, you know, previous years it wouldn't ever have been described as that. So for me, from a performance perspective, to be able to get to a place where I could, you know, actually deliver under the pressure like that, it was very satisfying, more so than the result or anything. So... and look, we didn't go on inevitably and win the All-Ireland, but it was.
Inevitably, yeah.
Inevitably.
Incredibly,
now.
Yeah. Incredibly, yeah. When you look at it, you know, you're the first team to beat the Dubs going for the 7 in a row, and it's Tyrone then that...
Yeah, and look, that was another learning I had to go through again, but, you know, it was still
older,
a long
wiser.
Way to come back. And, you know, when I came out of 2016, I genuinely didn't think I'd play for Mayo again. You know, that was... You know, my objective was very basic. I just wanted to play for Mayo again, like at any, you know, a league game. Yeah. And, you know, 2017, I didn't play a minute. So, you know, to be, my two objectives were to play for Mayo again and then to be, if possible, taken seriously as a goalkeeper again. And, you know, I think by the end of my career, I think I'd definitely done both of those. And of course, you know, 2016 still happened, but at least it wasn't the end point for me.
No, just very important. And a lot of people agree because lots of messages coming in. What a gorgeous guy. That's from a Dublin GA fan. Love the way they have to qualify it. Rob is a gentleman, had a superb career with Mayo. He left the jersey in a better place. And that's from Colin Brennan. Rob was so good to my sick son who loved GA. What a man. That's from Kyle and family from the Rossies. And congrats on a fantastic career. Thanks for the great memories. A legend and a real gentleman. That's from your Uncle Peter.
No, it's a biased audience you picked there.
And somebody is doing the whole Mayo thing where they said, it was pointed out in a Mayo newspaper, Mayo first won in Ireland in 1936, which is a square number, 44 by 44. The next highest square number is 2025, 45 by 45. So this could be our year. It better be because the next square number is 2116.
Okay.
That'd be a bit of a wait.
Definitely will be around for that one.
How do you look back on it? Are you delighted? Are you kind of... it was good to be there, wasn't it? And
yeah.
Proud moments.
Absolutely. Like I'm very grateful because like my career, as I said, back then even, I thought I wouldn't have any, you know, even to retire on my own terms, I didn't think I'd have that luxury, which lots of players don't get to do, you know, to get brought in or to get dropped or for whatever reason or get injured, even worse. You know, so I got to do that. And when I look back, the players I got to play with, the experiences that we got to have together, the teams we got to play against. And, you know, I was part of that, whether I was on the field or as a sub. And, you know, when I look at my career, I experienced every part of being a footballer, basically bar one, which was the final one, which was Windle Ireland. But like, it's a pretty, you know, full picture to have in a career looking back on it. And, you know, if I was to go back and look at myself at the start and look ahead, and you know, I probably would have taken it, you know, at the time. So I'm very grateful. I've learned so much. You know, I'm hoping that I can, you know, still play for another few years with Raheny and you know, hopefully drive on, do something good with them. But, you know, help, you know, the big thing I would say I've had over the last couple of years is people reach out to me who've been in similar situations, you know, and help as much as I can other players.
Management,
yeah, I'd love to go into management at some point in the future,
great.
Yeah, but not anytime soon. But yeah,
other things to do in the meantime.
But listen,
Rob, thanks so much for entertaining us over the years, and best luck to you and Orla becoming parents at the end of March. 2025 is a big year. This is where life is only starting.
Yeah, thanks very much, Oliver.
Good luck to you.